have a basketball program that we all expect to compete for Big Ten and national championships year in and year out.
There's no other way to look at it. It's one of the better jobs in Big Ten.
Final four!
I didn't think you was going to be this good, but it feels good!
First, I need the national championship.
Welcome on in, everyone, to the boardroom. Maddie here alongside Josh, Johnny, and Sam with a very special episode here today as we welcome in a very special guest, CBS Sports' own former site manager, I believe, of the Champagne Room. He's an Illinois fan himself, Tom Fornelli. Tom, welcome to the show. As, of course, we are an Illinois basketball podcast, we will start with what is most appropriate, and that is, of course, the Green Bay Packers loss in the playoffs and getting your very detailed description of how extremely happy you are that they're out of the playoffs.
Oh, it was amazing. Like, it is, there is nothing better as a Bears fan than the Packers losing in the playoffs, and that is both awesome and sad at the same time. But I think the best part of it was the feeling like it might be the end this time. Like, Aaron Rodgers might really be leaving. I don't think that, you know, I think that everything that happened over the last offseason going into this year and then the way that it ended, and now the Denver Broncos have hired the Packers offensive coordinator, Big Ben is retiring, so the Steelers and Broncos immediately become two places that he might find attractive that maybe present an easier path to a Super Bowl at this point, because the Packers kind of are going to be in cap hell this offseason. So,
gosh.
Yeah, best moment as a Bears fan.
Music to my ears, absolutely. I mean, I could talk about this all day, but for the actual people who want to hear about Illinois content, we'll talk about Illinois basketball. And we're here recording this on January 27th, right before the Northwestern game. We're atop the standings. As objectively as possible, where would you rank us in the league? Would you put us ahead of MSU, behind Purdue, ahead of Wisconsin, you know, somewhere in the middle of all that?
I mean, you just beat Michigan State without Kofi and Curbelo, so I'm putting us above Michigan State for sure. I would put us behind Purdue for sure. Other than that, I mean, Wisconsin is good, but I don't really fully buy into them. Like, they're 15-3, and you know, Johnny Davis is cool, and he's really good, and he's a scorer. But I look at that team, and it doesn't really strike me as an elite team as much as it strikes me as a good team getting good results. So I'm really interested in seeing that Illinois-Wisconsin game that'll be coming up, I think, in like a week or two at the most. But that'll be a telling matchup for us. It'll be a telling matchup for them, too. But I think that if I'm really, truly power ranking the Big Ten right now, I would have Purdue at 1 and Illinois at 2. And then Michigan at like 9 or 10.
There we go. I like how you threw that in there without even having to ask you. I appreciate that. And you mentioned beating them without Kofi and without Curbelo. So how do you actually evaluate a team like Illinois, who has missed so many key guys over basically the entire season?
It's hard, but I think that it is a testament to the job Brad Underwood has done since coming to the program. Because I mean, you go back not too long ago, this was a team like Illinois under John Gross, and Illinois even at the end of the Bruce Weber tenure, like, they had good players. Like, there was always one or two really good players in the team, or, you know, just like quote unquote star type players, but there was absolutely no depth. And if you think back to those teams, like if you look at Gross's first team and that his first season when they actually went to the tournament, you take out Brandon Paul and DJ Richardson from any of those games that year, Illinois's not beating anybody. And now you look at this team where they lose Kofi, who's an All-American. You lose Curbelo, who is, you know, considered one of the better point guards in the country, although he barely played at all this year. And you don't have those two guys, and you're facing a top 10 team in Michigan State, and you beat them. And yeah, it was kind of hairy at the end, but of course, what would you expect when you comes to closing time and you're missing the two guys you tend to turn to in those moments, and they're not there? You got to find somebody else to do it. And I think that Trent Frazier has been phenomenal. I think Plummer has been a terrific transfer in. And I just think that even the freshman, like Luke Goody, had a big game against Michigan State the other day, which maybe, you know, it was like a revenge game because he was down to Michigan State and Illinois for him. But it's just that kind of depth that this program, I feel like, hasn't really had in a very long time, to where they can not only withstand those losses, but play well in those losses. And we also had like our first kind of hint of that last year when we didn't have Iowa against Michigan and we beat the Wolverines in Ann Arbor. It's like, oh, wow, no, this team is no longer just about one or two players. Yeah, it's got a couple maybe NBA talents on the team, but it's got a whole lot more behind them as well. And that's just a really good sign for going forward, because I think another thing that we have to take away from it is, and maybe this will work to their benefit, this is a team that now is learning how to play without Kofi. It has learned how to play without Andre. And that's kind of important, because when you get into the tournament and you start facing other really good teams, they might have a way to take somebody out of play. And then you've got to learn how to beat them another way. And I think that that's the one thing about this team, this year's team compared to last year. I think this team can win a game in a lot different ways than it could last year, because I just don't think last year's team was a good enough shooting team that if Io had an off night or Kofi had an off night, you couldn't realistically rely on somebody else to carry you against a good team. But now they can, you know, they can hit the three, they can hit, you know, they've got good mid-range shooters and they've got good interior scorers, and they can beat you from anywhere on the court right now. And I think that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. They're more multifaceted than maybe they were last year. That helps you a little bit more down the line later in March. But assuming everyone is healthy in March, let's say it's last 5 minutes, Sweet 16 game, who are the five guys that you want on the court, assuming everyone is healthy and available?
Trent, Kofi, Andre, Grandison, and I guess DeMonte for defense. But I'd also go with Plummer, too, for that additional shooter out there. But, I mean, that's the thing. It's a tough decision. Like I was talking about earlier, like if you'd asked me that question a year or two ago, it'd been really easy. Like there would have been no thought to it. Now it's like, I don't know, maybe this guy, maybe that guy. And I think that, but in an odd way, because I love him, but I'm not sure right now Andre Curbelo is definitely one of the five guys I have to have out there.
Yeah, if you're talking defense.
It depends which,
yeah,
it depends which version you're going to get. If you're going to get the dude who's taking care of the ball and not doing stupid stuff, great. I could deal with stupid stuff every once in a while, but he goes into those modes where he just tries to make superstar plays over and over again, and he just becomes a turnover machine. If it's that guy, I don't want him in that five.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, the Plummer versus DeMonte is very interesting. Like, do you need a three? Do you need a defensive stop? It all depends on
that. It's matchup dependent. Yeah,
absolutely. But the first guy that you mentioned there, the surefire, no doubt, Trent Frazier, and I know that there are prerequisites for this, you know, to get your name into the rafters. If you could get rid of those and you could retire Trent's jersey next year or in the next 5 years, whenever, you think he's done enough to get in?
Oh, I would do it for sure. He's one of my favorite Illini players of all time. Uh-huh. Like I love Trent Frazier from just the evolution of him, because like when he first got here and he was, you know, under John Gross, like his freshman year, which feels like it was a decade ago at this point, but like he was the team's primary scorer. He was everything. He had to go out there, score 25 points a game. He had to distribute. He had to rebound. He had to do everything because the team stunk. He was the best player on the team. And here comes this, like, not a low-rated recruit, but he wasn't like some, you know, like McDonald's All-American type level recruit. He was just, hey, this is an intriguing player coming in as a true freshman, dominating. And it wasn't a good team, but he played very well. So to see that, and then Io shows up, so Trent's got to step back and try to change his role and adapt to a new position where he becomes more of a defensive stopper kind of complement. And now Io's gone, and while you still have Kofi is a dominant force, but Kofi's not a leader. Kofi's not like the guy who's going to fire everybody up and is out there making sure everybody's holding accountable. You need somebody holding Kofi accountable. And Curbelo hasn't been available. Like you were kind of hoping he would step into that IO role of becoming the alpha team leader, but he just hasn't been around enough to do it. So here comes Trent again, like, all right, I'm 35 years old now, so I'm going to take charge and I'm going to be in control. And he's just, it's been terrific. And just there are games where he hasn't played well, like his shot hasn't fallen off. And like he's even said, you know, he's one of those guys that when he starts hitting, they come quick and they come in a hurry and he scores a bunch of buckets. But there has never been a game in his 50-year Illinois tenure at this point where he took the night off. Like every single game he's played, you've gotten everything you can from him every single time. And for that, I love him, and the fact that he's good just only makes it even better.
Yeah, the amount of times that Trent will get like somewhat hurt and then have to leave the game and then come back shows that he just does not take nights off. Like how many tailbones he's bruised or that thing he wears on his shoulder where it looks like he just pitched like 17 innings. It's remarkable. It's remarkable.
Yeah, and I mean, he was there when we were seniors, so we definitely have a soft spot for him. But we talked about it a little bit, alluding to last year's team. The last time we talked, Illinois was a one seed with high hopes heading into the tournament, and then Sister Jean happened. Does that loss make you hesitant about this team? And like, how long did it take for you personally to get over the loss?
I'm not hesitant. I think that that was just an awful matchup for Illinois last year, because Kofi, like, the thing with Kofi that I think that people kind of overlook, and I know it gets mentioned like ad nauseum by announcers when you watch Illini games, but like, this is a kid who did not play a ton of basketball. He's very much an unfinished product, and he's still learning how to do a whole lot of things. And last year, he didn't really understand how to deal with somebody like Cam Krutwig. But like Io, he goes into the offseason every single year recognizing a deficiency and working on that deficiency and improving. And we have seen that this year. I mean, last year, like, Kofi had what, like, 3 assists all last season?
Mm-hmm.
And while he's still not a good passer or a great passer, he's become much better at it, and you see the improvement. So I think that alone, I think Kofi's a much better rounded big man now, which would help in that kind of matchup. But I think the biggest thing is kind of going on what we were talking earlier, like the wing play that the Illini have now and the outside shooting. That is just something they didn't have last year. Like, Adam Miller, you would hoped had would be that guy to bring it, but he just never really, like, he had moments, but he never really broke through. Trent is streaky. Grandison was good last year, but he wasn't, you know, what he's become this season. DeMonte shot like 80% from three, but he was only taking one. He was only taking like one per game because he's still very hesitant to take the shot. Whereas you look around now, like, when you get to the NCAA tournament, you look at the teams that go far, it's guard play. It's guys who could, you know, space you out and hit shots. Like, that's what Baylor did last year. That's what Gonzaga was able to do, even though they had Drew Timmy and other bigs. But, you know, it was Casper. It was Suggs. It was guys like that. And when you look at all the best teams that go deep, they always have excellent guards. They always have depth at that position. And they always have good shooters. And that's kind of what this Illinois team, I think, is better equipped at. So going into the tournament this year, I mean, I think it's safe to say they won't be a one seed again at this point, unless they get really hot
here down
the stretch.
What if they win the Big Ten? What if they win the Big Ten?
They might. Still, I'm saying,
like, Gonzaga is kind of locked in as a one seed. Probably the team that wins the Big 12 is a one seed. But
I mean, Auburn's number one right now. Yeah. Like, are they favored for a one
seed? Yeah, although they almost lost to Mizzou. So.
Hate to see it. Hate to see it.
Shout out to Konzo not fouling, by the way.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my game. God. Just, that was brutal.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
We dodged. I know that Mizzou fans like to say Illinois offered Konzo and he turned them down for Mizzou, which I'll let them continue to believe happened, but just enjoy that. I think obviously you go to the tournament, like, it's really hard to win a national title. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to win 6 games and you can't afford to have one bad night, and you've got to play, you know, back to backs in a sense. So it's, I have more confidence in this team making a run in the tournament. I mean, obviously I was very high about last year's team, and that loss in the second round was not what you expected, and it sucked. Like, I went into last year's tournament kind of hoping to get to the Sweet 16 at the very least, and then be like, all right, after that everything's gravy. So the fact that they didn't even get that far sucked. But I do think that this year's team is much better equipped. It's older, it's got the experience of being there, it knows what to expect, and I think that will come in handy, even though I think this team is better. So I'm in that same position where it's like Sweet 16 or bust, and anything after that's going to be gravy.
Yeah, I mean, it's too bad. We really could have used that experience in 2020 when the tournament got canceled for 21 to have kind of that chip on the shoulder that didn't really exist. Was it difficult for you kind of continuing to work your job? Because fans like us, we pretty much like turn the tournament off, and just after Illinois lost, we're like, I'm just going to ignore it and act like it's not happening. But
after
for
every
you,
Illinois loss.
Yeah.
After
every loss. Yeah, every loss. It's like, okay, I'm not watching SportsCenter for like 3 days. But for you, obviously, you still have to kind of do your job, and that is being a sports media personality. So is that difficult?
No, I mean, let's look at the teams I've grown up caring about. Like, I'm very much used to losing. It's the winning part that kind of catches me off guard, where I'm like, all right, I need a day just to be like, what the hell happened here? So no, I'm not really. Like, you get kind of desensitized to it in a little bit too. I think that's just part of working in this industry, is like, you still care a lot about certain teams. And there are some teams I grew up really rooting for that it's kind of dulled a little bit. While I still care, I'm not nearly as hard into it as I am like with Illinois basketball is one of those teams that I still genuinely have like an emotional connection to while watching. So the losses hurt more than others, but for me, honestly, the best way to deal with that is just keep watching more games.
that's what the doctor has prescribed is.
I think that's called addiction.
But so how are you feeling heading into the matchup with little brother Northwestern on Saturday?
You know, they're kind of feisty this year. Like I haven't seen a lot of them. Obviously their overall record's not great, but they are from what, you know, the numbers I see and then just from box score scouting and all that kind of stuff. Like they're not a pushover. They've got a couple decent big guys who will cause you problems if you don't defend them well. And we could see, you know, like Kofi will get into foul trouble. Omar Payne is a foul waiting to happen. Like when he's playing well, he plays well, but there's too many fouls. Coleman Hawkins is a little too aggressive with the fouls. And I think that that is something that could be a problem for Illinois against Northwestern because they just don't, you know, if they get into foul trouble, like we saw in the Purdue game. Now I'm not comparing Northwestern's bigs to Zach Edey and Trevion Williams, but you get the overall point that I'm trying to make here. So I don't think it's a pushover like it has been the last few years. Like it's been boring, honestly. Like there really hasn't been any rivalry as far as basketball is concerned with Northwestern in my mind in the last few seasons, because that team has been so bad that it's like, unless we win by 20, you're kind of ticked off. But I think this year that team could be kind of a pain in the butt. I still think we should beat them and we will beat them, but it's probably going to be a lot more difficult than anybody's expecting.
Yeah, it would have been interesting had they kept Miller Kopp because they kind of had that core of guys who are now all kind of older.
Seem like they've been there forever too.
Yeah, all those guys have been there forever. But are you going to be in attendance or are you going to be have to work?
If I am in attendance, it will be strictly as a fan. But there's a decent chance, but I've got other stuff I've got to figure out beforehand. But I'm only a 20-minute drive away, so it's going to be one of those.
Hit up Buff Joe's beforehand, you know.
Yeah, it's a Northwestern game, so it's not like I can't just walk in and walk up and get a ticket.
Bang, I love it. Yeah, the high school arena always has extra tickets. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, last thing about Illinois basketball, just kind of like looking towards the future. We saw this one Twitter account tweet, like, next year we're going to have Curbelo, Goody, Epps, Payne, Rogers, Harris, Melendez, Danger, and more. Oh, my God, this is such a good feeling. We kind of have this joke where if you just have a recognizable name, you just, like, say names and make it, we're going to be good. Like, okay. What's your thoughts on like, next year's core? And are you feeling optimistic? Or do you feel like it's kind of going to be a step-down year?
It's hard to say. It'll be interesting because I do think that Kofi is such a dominant force that it will take some adjustment to not having him around, because so much of what they do, like when they just need a bucket, and it's like every single possession, the ball goes into Kofi. Like if it doesn't go into Kofi at some point, Underwood's on the sideline really pissed off because he wants him touching the ball every single time because he's, you know, your best scorer at this point. So I think not having him around and not having that kind of center of focus will be a problem. But Dane Danger, like from guys I talk to who cover, you know, the recruiting aspect of all that stuff for high school, college basketball, because I don't really cover it that closely. I'm more focused on the football and that side of it. But I've been told by a lot of people that kid's good. Like he's not Kofi because there are very few Kofi Coburns out there. Like Kofi Coburn's kind of a throwback to a Patrick Ewing type of, you know, dominant low post center. Those guys, they don't really make a lot of anymore. Dange is more of the modern kind of big that you expect, like rim protector, rebounder, and kind of spacer. But everybody I talk to says he's very good. He's going to be a huge impact player for them next year. He's going to step into the starting lineup. So it's going to be him surrounded by four guards pretty much, and that we've seen can have a lot of, you know, you can have a lot of success with that. And Brad Underwood was pretty open about it last year after the tournament, saying he wanted more height and length in his wings. And we've seen him kind of make the adjustment to that. So I think next year it's probably record-wise we might get off to a pretty slow start, because I do think that Underwood is going to make something of a transition, kind of like he did when he first came here, brought his spread style, and then realized it's not really working, not with this team, not in this league, changed things up a lot. I think we're going to see him kind of evolve back to more of his natural self next year with that roster, because I think that's going to be a roster that's much better suited for his ideal style.
It's just challenging for us. We're big. Rankings actually matter. You work for the company, one of the companies that does the rankings. And so this is our first year with like out of top 40 player. And since like IO joined, so it's just challenging for me to think that it's not going to be a step down. But you're the first person who did say like positive things about Danger. So I'm kind of excited about that. Maybe we don't need like an automatic transfer into that five spot. But speaking of one of our top 40 players, Io, he's now on the Bulls. And it's the most amazing thing in the world. When he was initially drafted, what were your expectations and how close have they kind of matched your expectations to how he's performed so far this year?
He's exceeding them, but I always had high expectations for him.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Io. Like I said, it's like Io is going to be somebody that before the draft, I was like, he's going to be somebody who goes either in the late first round or the early second round. And he is going to be the guy who everybody's like looking like, oh, my God, how many? Why did all these teams pass up on him? Because the thing about Io is he has his limitations and they're still very much on display with the Bulls. Like he's not an explosive leaper. Like when he gets to the rim, when he drives, like you see a lot of his shots get blocked because, you know, he's not explosive to the rim like that. He's not going to be able to just dunk on everybody's head without a good run up. But kind of like I was talking about earlier with Kofi, Io was one of those guys where he came to Champaign and he was already talented, obviously, top 40 recruit, had deficiencies. Every single offseason, he figured out what he needed to work on and he worked on it and he improved it. And he improved it while not suffering in other aspects of his game. Everything else stayed on the same level. He did that every single year. So you could tell he's got that kind of growth mindset where he wants to be really good and he's willing to put the work in. And every coach he's ever had tells you how he's eager to learn and he wants to learn and he wants to be coached. And those are those kind of things that when it comes to a lot of talent, like lots of dudes have talent and a lot of dudes don't work out because they just aren't willing to put the work in, or at least don't have an understanding that they need to put that work in. That's not Io. He's got the right kind of mindset. So whether it was the Bulls who ended up getting him or whoever the hell ended up taking him, if it wasn't the Bulls, I was very confident that Io was going to have an NBA career. Like, and I don't just mean like 3 or 4 years, get a second contract and then go out. I mean, he's an NBA player. He's going to be a rotation player for a decade in this league. And I'm thrilled that it's with the Bulls. And I'm thrilled for his sake that they only gave him the 2-year deal instead of the standard 3, because he's going to get paid a lot quicker for it too. So, I mean, I think it's awesome. I'm just thrilled that it's with the Bulls. I'm thrilled that the Bulls have had to deal with some injuries to allow him to get more playing time to even, you know, stimulate his development even further, and to see him playing as well as he's playing, it brings kind of a tear to your eye kind of situation, because it's like you feel like, in a weird sense, I feel like I've watched him grown up, because the first time I saw Io play basketball, he was at Morgan Park. Like he was literally just a little teenage kid, and I've watched him grow up from that into, you know, now his early 20s, but more of a physical specimen than he was at the time. Right. And he's a professional, he's doing everything right. And it's like, damn, that's exactly what's supposed to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Our next question was going to be, how much happiness does it bring you about Io? But you answered that perfectly. Like we treat him like he's our child. We've watched him grown up this whole entire time. It's truly remarkable to watch. So now we're a half game out of first place. Lonzo and Caruso are out with the Bulls. Io does have the impact, so that's a positive with that. But if the Bulls make, let's say, what round will you be satisfied with this season? Because I don't know if you can be like, they're shoo-in for the Eastern Conference Finals or the finals in the first place. So are you satisfied with what kind of season?
Oh, I mean, if they finish in the top four of the conference, I'll be satisfied no matter what the playoffs hold, because that's just far exceeding any expectations. Right. But that said, now that they've exceeded those expectations, yours kind of rise up to go with it, because you're like, well, shit, how good might, oh, sorry, but how good
no, we're good with actually that.
All right, cool. Can I just start dropping F-bombs? Like,
yeah, yeah, go for it.
All right, fuck, shit, damn, cool.
Io fucking DeSumo.
Yeah, that's right. But like, so you see this, and now I feel like I say I'll be happy with a playoff berth, but the truth is, if they get bounced in the first round, I'll probably be pretty pissed about it, it's like a really epic, entertaining series. But yeah. I think that this is a team that should get to the second round at a minimum, and depending on how things shake out and injuries elsewhere and within their own roster, there's possibility of a conference finals run. I don't know if they'd get to the NBA finals, but I think they can make it pretty deep run, because the thing about the Bulls with this team is if they're fully healthy and at full strength, they can play a lot of different ways and they can match up well with a lot of different teams, which really comes in handy in the playoffs. And I think if you look where Arturs Karnišovas came from, that's kind of what Denver's model has been in the Western Conference. It's like, all right, they're not the superstar team, they have some really good players, but they can match up well with anybody. And I think that's kind of what this Bulls roster has posed, which is going to pose problems for other opponents in a 7-game series.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I think any type of result that ends up with at least the second round is something where I'll be satisfied. But yeah, got to get spoiled at one point. Don't want to win that first round. Go ahead, Sam.
I mean, obviously we're huge college fans. This is a college basketball podcast. I think I speak on behalf of all four of us when I say we've been kind of critical of the NBA, kind of like the lazy arguments, not a lot of defense, a lot of one-on-one basketball. It's actually been pretty fun this year though. We've all been watching a lot more. Do you feel like it's been more fun this year, the NBA, with points going down a little bit, or are we just like totally on the Bulls bandwagon and this is how it's always been?
No, I think it's better. Honestly, I agree with you. I feel like when the analytics took over and everything became like layup or three, that led to a lot of ISO ball because teams were either driving to the lane and kicking out, or they were just driving to the lane and getting that easy shot. But I think we've seen like there's a difference in philosophy as far as team building is concerned. And I think the Bulls are a pretty good example of that, where it's like, for a while there, it was like, all right, well, you have to have LeBron or Durant. You have to have like this superstar and that superstar and build it around him. Now you're seeing you don't really like that, the Denver model. Again, you could build a team, but with a bunch of good players and good options, and actually play basketball now. And I think some of the rule changes that you like that have allowed, you know, a little more contact have also made that possible, because now it's not as easy just to get to the free throw line as it was, because it became a game of, it's like kind of what baseball had been there for a few years when the analytics took over, where it really became a three true outcome sport. It was either if you walk, strike out, home run, that's all anybody was looking for. And now people have realized the limitations of that, and they've also realized it's boring to watch. So there has been, I think, a conscious effort by everybody to kind of change things up a little bit to make it more entertaining. And it's a better product. I think that, you know, when you take the skill level of everybody who's in the NBA, and then you make the game a little bit more well-rounded and bring in a little more aspects to it than they had for a while, you're going to get a much better product. And I think that's good for the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, everyone loves kind of DeMar's mid-range game.
Yes, return.
It's kind of funny, though, because it seems like every Chicago person's like, oh, DeMar taught Io the mid-range. And we're like, no. Did you watch him in Illinois? Like you're telling on yourself right now.
Yeah,
but,
Io's inability to hit threes developed Io's mid-range.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah, and I was asking some of my more NBA fluent friends why points have gone down, and I heard some new ball conspiracies, which I'll take. I definitely feel like the game has been better, at least than a few years ago. But
it's really simple. It's not a conspiracy. It's that you just don't get free throws for guys breathing on you anymore. Like James Harden's bull crap that he was pulling off there for years, where it was just swing your arms through or flail around and get to go to the free throw line. They don't call that anymore. So I can't remember the actual average, but I did this because there's a reason I was betting a bunch of unders on the NBA early in the season, and it was very profitable. But like the overall free throw attempts per game had decreased dramatically, and I think that's what it's been more than
It's like Christmas.
I saw James Harden. I can't confirm this, but I saw James Harden is down 3.7 free throw attempts a game, which is insane.
That's a lot.
But
Sam, very impressive for someone who could care less about the NBA, Sam. That's a very specific statistic for someone who's
a so-called NBA hater. But I think we covered the over 500 teams. So now let's shift gears to Illinois football. First off, Brett, year one in review. What did you think of his first year?
I'm encouraged. There were definitely some moments that ticked me off. Like there were some fourth down decisions during the season that I just thought were terrible. Like I felt like in the Maryland game and the Rutgers game, there were decisions made where they had a chance to be aggressive and go win the game, and they were more conservative. And I understand the thought process behind it, in that, frankly, the Illinois offense this season didn't do a whole lot to really earn that kind of trust in those situations. Whereas the defense had been, from the Virginia game on, the defense had been the best unit on the team, had been playing well. So Bielema and the coaching staff, they were trusting their defense to get them the ball back and get them into good positions. But I also think that if you have that veteran offensive line and you're really trying to kind of establish a physical kind of, you know, identity at the time, you should have gone for it on those fourth downs, because it's Rutgers in Maryland. You should be able to pick up the yard against those defenses. But other than that, I mean, the floor has been raised, I think, significantly. And I just feel like there was better coaching in game than we've probably seen at Illinois in a while. Like, even going back before the Lovie tenure, my biggest criticism with Lovie's in-game management was there was a game plan before the game and they would stick to it. And if it wasn't working, they would stick to it. I don't think that's the case. Like, we saw, like, again, Ryan Walters comes to Champaign, his defensive coordinator has his defense, is running his defense. 3 games into the season, he knows my defense ain't going to work with the players I have on this roster. So what does he do? He changes his defense. He not fundamentally, but he makes some significant changes to what they do. A lot less, you know, man, more zone, although they still play a lot more man compared to most teams. But it worked. And you would not have seen that with Lovie Smith. If it wasn't working in the first few weeks, Lovie Smith's answer was, well, we just got to force more turnovers, so punch the ball harder. And they wouldn't change anything. And I think offensively, I was not a fan of Tony Peterson in that offense. I felt like with that offensive line, you should have been able to do a little bit more. And I understand they were handcuffed a bit by the quarterback situation with Brandon Peters and then Art Sitkowski having to come in. But I just felt like Brandon Peters was better than I felt like Tony Peterson gave him credit for. Like, I think if you had allowed, it would have given him a few more chances with, like, vertical throws up the seams down the middle of the field. I don't trust Brandon Peters on the outside of the numbers, but down the middle of the field, I trusted him. And I think you could have used his mobility more intentionally, like given him some runs. Because I do feel like if you watch, like, Brandon Peters was a guy who kind of didn't really get into a game until he took a hit. So I would have had a lot more designed runs with Peters on the first quarter just to let him take a shot and wake him up a little bit, because it seems to get him going. But I think that I have optimism that Bielema saw his offense and made it, instead of saying, we'll see if we could fix it in year two, he just said, no, this isn't working. I'm going to go get this guy and we're going to bring things in. I'm happy to see that kind of decisiveness. I think that's a good sign going forward. The defense, I think, obviously, you got to replace some key guys. Offensively, I think it's going to be a slow adjustment next year because you are replacing most of your offensive line and you've got a whole lot of new people coming in. And it's not like with a new OC, a new line, new players. Like, I don't even know who the hell our starting receivers are going to be at this point. It's probably going to be somewhat ugly at the start of the season. It's like the schedule plays out well in that you're playing, like, I think Wyoming to open the season, and they lost pretty much their entire team to the transfer portal, which was strange. But I think you just kind of have to get through September with the best results possible. And I think the schedule breaks that way for them. And so I think they can get to a bowl game next year because, I mean, really, they were very close to getting to a bowl game this year. Like, maybe they made a couple of different choices on those fourth downs, we might be talking about a team that finished 7-5 and not 5-7.
That's a very fair point. I think for me, the kind of defining thing is, last year, last game of Lovie, even though he's gone, you go from losing very badly at Penn State, no fans this year, full stadium, you beat Penn State 1 year later. Where does that Illinois-Penn State game rank in terms of weirdest college football games you watch? Because I'm sure you see a ton being on cover three.
That game was awful. I enjoyed the hell. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it was awful. That was just bad football for the most part. Also, I will say we got pretty lucky there because there were a couple calls early in that game that probably
we won't talk about that.
We will not be talking about forward progress. We will not be that is not reviewable, so we cannot review that here.
Yeah, and had it gone their way, we never would have gotten to overtime. But shit happens. But like, I think that, I mean, it was a good game. I think it's important that it happened. I think that it's a nice stepping stone forward, and I think it goes back to kind of what I was getting at earlier, where I just feel like there's more competent coaching. Like, the interesting part of that game, while I remember, is the barge formation. And that was the one thing where Tony Peterson did this year where I was like, oh, okay. And I mean, it felt like you were going back in time to like Cro-Magnon football, but they spent the bye. They watched Penn State and they recognized something with their run defense. And they said, all right, well, what if we throw in a formation that they are not prepared for? They haven't seen us run anything from it. And we just hammer them with it. So they bring it out and it has early success. And it's like, as any good coach does, when something's working, you're going to keep doing it until it doesn't work. And it kept working. Like, Penn State was never able to figure it out. They never adjusted. They never stopped it. And it helped them get the win. And I think that was one of the high moments for me, again, in that whole vein of This is a coaching staff that will show the willingness to change things up when it's not working or when you have to. And I feel like it was probably born out of pessimistic reasons. Like, I would guess that Tony Petersen not only saw something he could exploit in the Penn State defense, but the coaching staff said, listen, man, we're going on the road to play Penn State. This team kicked our ass last year. There are going to be a lot of people in the crowd. We need to do something to just try to control the clock to keep this thing from, you know, keep that their offense off the field and keep it close and give ourselves a chance to win late. And it worked. So it was born out of pessimism, but sometimes pessimism leads to good results.
That's fair.
For sure. Anyone playing Virginia Tech this year, who now is Penn State's defensive coordinator, might want to take a look at that tape from last year, but definitely a stepping stone.
Yeah.
Nine linemen. Definitely a stepping stone. And then we finished the year beating Northwestern pretty handily. Do you think we're finally getting back in the mix, or is it kind of just the Northwestern play dead for a year and then quickly bounce back and ruin our hope?
I don't want to pronounce Northwestern dead, because that would come back and bite me pretty quickly, I think. But I mean, I think like when Brandon Joseph left Northwestern for Notre Dame, I think that was a huge blow, because Brandon Joseph is the best player on their defense. And they've had, you know, they have like a good defense. Like, they're always well coached and they're schemed up and they perform well, but they don't have a lot of really good, talented players. Brandon Joseph's a really talented player, and him leaving is probably going to cause them some problems, because they aren't the type of program that just has the kind of, you know, the next four or five star guy lined up right behind to jump in and take over. They've got to develop somebody to replace him now, or find somebody in the transfer portal. But I just think that offensively, that team is so stunted. And I feel like Pat Fitzgerald can't get out of his own way sometimes, and I don't blame him, because he's had so much success doing things the way that they've done it. But I feel like that's a team that, you know, they really need to change their offensive identity, I think. But I don't know that they will. And if they don't, I feel like next year, I don't think they're dead for sure. But I would say right now, if I look at the Big Ten West, there are six teams I think are capable of winning that division next year. And Northwestern's the one that isn't. Like, I think that the rest of the division is kind of that close. Like, Wisconsin's obviously the favorite in my eyes, especially if they get Caleb Williams. And it's like, I think Wisconsin, if you give Caleb Williams to the Badgers, they suddenly become like an actual playoff team or a playoff contender. Sorry. But I think that the gap between Wisconsin, Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska, Purdue is not that significant. I think that once you get past those guys, there's a pretty wide gap between them and Northwestern right now. So I would expect them to be finishing last in the division.
My only issue with that is that we know our players and we know what we brought in the transfer portal. When Lovie was doing so poorly recruiting, this next year is like where you'll start seeing like how much of a talent gap there is between the teams. Hopefully you're right, where we're part of that five team conversation in between Wisconsin and Northwestern. But I don't know, that's why it makes me more nervous. Like, Lovie was just out recruited so much by these teams during his tenure.
But thankfully the transfer portal exists.
Right.
You're
exactly.
Allowed to kind of fix those problems quicker. And I also think, honestly, like, the development of a lot of these players over the last, since Brett took over, you see gains on the field. Like, one of the things that always bothered me about Illinois football, like going through the Tim Beckman era and then into most of Lovie's era, was like, you know, I obviously cover the sport for a living, so I watch everybody, and like, you're on the field for like the national title game between Georgia and Alabama, and you see these guys and you're like, holy shit, these are not human beings. These are some sort of giant space mutants. These are incredible. They're huge. They're fast. And then I would watch Illinois and I'd be like, man, we don't have those guys. Like, we look like a high school team too often as far as like the physical profile of our players. This year, Illinois started looking like it had guys who were, you know, legitimate football players. And I think that's a huge thing. And I think that goes to kind of like the development of them, you know, in the weight room and all that kind of stuff, the conditioning, the training that they've put in some of those changes. And I think we saw a lot of those gains quickly. And I think that's one thing we can kind of hang our hat on, maybe as far as being hopeful for next year, because there is going to be a lot less experience, and there were problems with those recruiting classes. But I think just as far as developing them as athletes and players, this staff is like light years ahead of the last one.
Yeah,
that's actually a great transition, though, because I was curious. Obviously, on cover three, you've kind of got to spend most of your time not talking about Illinois. Does that make it harder for you to be delusional or optimistic or kind of lie to yourself about where Illinois is going when you're watching Bama's and Georgia's?
No, I'm pretty honest with myself about the football team. Like when I think they're bad, I'm not afraid to say that they're bad, and they've been bad a lot. So it's like, you know what it's like when you see it. It's just, that was the difference. Again, I'm going back to, that was the difference between, but just like, this was not a great team in 2021, but it wasn't a terrible team. It was just kind of like an, okay, I see some things work. I see what's working, and I see what's not working. And I understand why, because just talent wise, they didn't quite have it, like especially at the receiver position. And I think that's one huge thing that I'm probably going to be watching pretty closely as far as the transfer portal is concerned here. Once we get through the spring and then that whole second wave of transfers happens, I think it is critical, like, that they find a receiver. Like, I think Isaiah Williams is very useful in the slot as that kind of guy. And I think Tony Peterson did a terrible job of utilizing what he's capable of doing. And I think Lunny has a much better idea of how to use him, especially with like the RPO game, because I think that was the one thing about the UTSA offense that was the most intriguing to me, was the way they do their RPOs. But I do still think like the Deuce Spann loss hurts. And I know for a fact that the coaching staff was bothered by that. Like they were upset to see him leave, because they really do feel like he has a chance to be a very good wide receiver, but he's kind of, and you know, if it's his life, he wants to be a QB. He doesn't want to be a wide receiver. So he left because he went somewhere he thinks he's going to get a chance to play quarterback more. But I think that they desperately need to find somebody who can be a perimeter receiver, because that's the one thing. It's so much easier to defend an offense if you only have to defend the middle of the field. Like if you don't have to worry about outside the numbers because you don't feel the team has a receiver capable of beating you out there, it just makes your life so much easier. So I think if Illinois is really going to reach its potential next year, that is one area that they have to address. So that's the one thing I'm going to be watching closely.
Yeah, and you referenced the Barry Lunny hire, and you referenced the transfer portal, and two guys which have, you know, come through via the transfer portal are Mr. DeVito and Mr. Sitkowski. And I've always considered myself so lucky to be an Illinois football fan. But I mean, gosh, how lucky does Barry Lunny have to feel that he gets to choose between DeVito and Sitkowski this fall? I mean, I'm not going to call it a Sophie's choice, but I mean, it's got to be, it's an interesting quarterback room.
It's a pretty easy choice for me. Art Sitkowski, like, bless him, I just don't think he's a Power 5 quarterback. I think that he is somebody who could maybe do much better at a Group of 5 school. I don't know if he's got the accuracy of somebody who can really excel or at least be on a winning Power 5 team. I think Tommy DeVito, like, when you go back to his first season as a starter at Syracuse, he was good. Like, they changed their approach. Like, Dino was like part of the whole Art Briles tree where they want to spread you out as far as possible and just air raid and throw like really simple one read pass. Like, all right, if the vert's not there, we're throwing this angle or we're throwing to the flat. And they just didn't have the offensive line to block for it. Like Syracuse's offensive line last year was very much a run blocking offensive line. They could not protect the QB to save their life. And of course, some of that's on DeVito too, because DeVito has some of that Brandon Peters to him where it's like, bro, get rid of the damn ball. Like, don't just stand there waiting for the guy to become more open than he is. He's open. Make the throw. So that's something I think we need to watch. But I also think that the thing with Lunny is it's a much quicker approach that's not all that dissimilar from the Briles style, in that it's mostly a one-read offense that dictates everything you're going to do, whether it's going to be like a bubble screen out to the perimeter receiver, you're going to hand it off, or there's going to be a slant that you throw to. And we saw, God knows we saw enough of that slant in the UTSA game.
Oh, my gosh.
But yeah. I think DeVito is a good fit for it. And I think that he's somebody who is not going to light the world on fire and not fill you with excitement sitting there to think, oh man, we've got like an all-conference quarterback here. But I do think he is somebody who fits into this offense pretty well. I do think he's more mobile than most people realize or he gets credit for. I think he's got something in common with Brandon Peters that way, where he's not going to be winning any sprints. But
sneaky, athletic, defense, smart.
I wouldn't even call him sneaky. I think he's just athletic. And I think that, you know, when the defense is there, if there's space for him to run and pick up a first down, I think he's plenty capable of picking it up. He's not going to tear off 45-yard long touchdown runs, but he can get you 7-8 yards when you need to move the chain. So I think that will come in handy. And I just think that overall, this will probably be a more dynamic offense next season. But again, it's most of it, DeVito's nice. DeVito needs somebody to throw to.
Yeah, the receivers are going to be the primary issue. And you were referencing earlier conferences or in terms of the West of how there are like six teams that can win it. And I kind of got a shiver down my spine when I got this notification on my phone the other day that talked about potential conference realignment in the Big Ten or potentially like scrapping divisions. Because there's just no way that this doesn't end up screwing over Illinois and putting them in a division with one of Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan. Like, there's just no way that realignment doesn't lead to more equity in terms of conference play, but there's just no way Illinois doesn't end up having to play some of these blue chip teams way more frequently than they are now.
Yeah, I think the one thing, like, you have to approach it, because the way the Big Ten's going to do this is, let's be real, they're going to start from the top down. Like when they start figuring out who your three rivals are, and they're going to look at Ohio State. They're going to say, well, we got to give them Michigan, obviously. And then they're going to decide for their second rival, whether it's like Penn State or Michigan State or Wisconsin, whoever the hell it ends up being. And then they're going to say, well, crap, we got to give them like a, we got to give them a gimme. Hey, don't they have that rivalry with Illinois?
Yeah, of course.
Hide the Elbuck Trophy. Hide the Elbuck Trophy.
Exactly. So they're going to be like, so we'll give them Illinois too as their third pod game. But I mean, as a fan of the sport, I think divisions are dumb. I think that divisions too often, I mean, they made sense in a scheduling world when the money wasn't what it is now with the television money that comes in and you wanted to save money for, you know, traveling and all that kind of stuff. But in the modern age of this, where this sport has gone, I think they've kind of lost their purpose. And I think they're more of a hindrance at times because it sets up where you've seen too many times where a conference title game, like last year in the Big Ten, like, or hell, in the ACC most years. Like, there's Clemson that's 12-0, 11-1, and it's playing an 8-4 team when meanwhile the second place team in their division might be 10-2. And I think that that's the one thing that getting rid of the divisions eliminates, is you're going to have a lot less of those matchups. So it makes your conference title game more enticing, and that in turn will make you and your teams more enticing to the college football playoff, which is what this is all really about, which bothers me because, again, we're making decisions based on the college football playoff instead of what's actually best for your conference, your school, and your alumni and your fans. And that's worrisome to me, but I think that horse is out of the barn and there's really no coming back for that. But I like it from the logical standpoint of three permanent rivals and then a rotation of the other five games. So that way you're playing everybody else in the conference at least every 2 years. Now, I would very much prefer it if Illinois' three rivals are like Northwestern, Illinois, and Purdue than Ohio State. And although I also kind of like to keep Iowa, but I think that just from a win standpoint, give me Indiana, Northwestern, and Purdue.
So you're saying it's going to help us get to the college football playoff with the realignment?
Oh, for sure. I mean, well, Illinois is not going to need any help getting to the playoff.
Of course.
In a few more years.
Right. Well, we were talking about, you know, DeVito and Sikowski, and so we don't really need any more help other than that. Yes, of course.
Those were his exact words. Okay. Last college football thing. Want to give you a chance to set the record straight on behalf of everyone at Cover 3, because I've heard some conflicting opinions. Your official stance, Cover 3, are we pro bowl game, the more the merrier, or are there too many bowl games? And again, this is on behalf of everyone at Cover 3, no pressure.
I am pro bowl game, but the funny part is Danny's not wrong. Like, there are sometimes, it's like, I get what he's saying, I get where he's coming from, in that especially now when players are opting out of these games, like, I mean, let's be real, like, I'm going to watch them. Because I love watching them. I love betting on them. I love doing all that. But most of these games are nothing more than like ESPN creating television inventory. Like, ESPN owns the majority of these games, and they created them just so they have something to show at 2 p.m. on a Wednesday in December. So, like, if they went away, wouldn't it be the end of the world? So I'll take them all. I'll watch them all. But I also understand fully why somebody might say there's way too many of these things, I can't pay attention to this, who the hell cares, why do I want to watch Coastal Carolina play, you know, Western Kentucky. Like, well, that's great to me. That's not going to be great to everybody.
CJ Marable was a Bears running back for a little bit, so I wanted to do a little scouting on Coastal Carolina. So I think that that's a good bowl game, but I understand people who don't want to watch that.
Oh, I'll make a better choice. And nobody really needs to see 2-6-6 Power 5 teams going at it in Shreveport.
Is that an Illinois? That's a very specific Illinois bowl game reference, I think, right there. The heart of Dallas. Well, yeah, that was a tough day down there. That was a tough day. Okay, go ahead.
No, it's like Danny tweeted that during the Maryland Virginia Tech game. Let's be clear. And that game was like, what, 55-7 when he tweeted. He's like, man, they're way too much. Like, why am I watching this crap? So, yeah. But again, the official stance of Cover 3 Podcast is there are not enough bowl games. Mm. We need more bowl games because it just gives us something to talk about. But also on the other side of that, Chip and I during bowl season do our daily bowl previews. So from that standpoint, I wouldn't mind if there were maybe a couple less because that's just a little less work that I have to do. But, you know, it's fine. I'll talk to Chip anytime he wants to chat.
I love it. Yeah, I love it.
Okay, so let's get back into it. So you're going down to a game in Champaign. Where are you eating and where are you drinking?
Well, the place is the thing. It's been so long. Everything's different now. I would drink at Murphy's just for old time's sake. Where would I eat? Let's see. La Bamba's is gone. Papa Del's is still around. What's the barbecue joint in Urbana?
Black Dog.
There we go. Black Dog is where I'd probably be eating.
Okay.
Yep.
Great spots. Do you have any like hidden gems that you feel like maybe not quite as popular amongst, I don't know, the basic Illinois fan, but you're like, oh yeah.
No, it's hard because like I haven't been down there in a couple of years. Like I haven't been down there since all the COVID crap. But like the last time I was down there a few years ago, I mean, I barely recognized campus. Like
it's actually, wild.
Like I recognize campus. Like where actually you went to school, but like everything around it is completely different than it was when I was there. It's like I went back to like my old apartments and I was like looking up at all these high rises that were not there. Like there was like two high rises on campus when I was going to school there. And it was like, wow, they live in the high rise. They must be rich.
Yeah, no, we finally had that like we're old moment when we went back to down to campus and we're like, it looks totally different. And even where old Cam's was is now like a high rise. And that's like really close to the quad. So it's kind of crazy how different it looks.
Yeah, it's unrecognizable.
Is there like an Illinois program or sport that you feel confident that you could take over and at least like win one conference title? Like, do you think
an easy answer to this?
Yeah.
Football.
Yeah.
Football. I think I'd be a good recruiter for basketball, but I don't know if I could coach basketball to save my life. I could do football.
What about like just tell the golfers to just golf, you know?
Oh, see that hole?
Yeah.
Hit the ball into it.
Yeah.
What about the women's basketball program that has 5 wins, conference win in the last like 5 years?
I probably could not help that.
No,
No. I mean, I could pay players to come play. Like, I could probably handle that pretty easily.
But yeah.
As far as once the game started, you're gonna need somebody else.
Yeah.
I'll be the bag man for women's basketball.
Oh yeah. So when Illinois becomes legal to bet on college teams in state, will you be partaking, or is that kind of a boundary that you have to set for yourself?
I would never bet on Illinois athletes because then that might corrupt the outcome of the game.
Yeah.
These poor, helpless children that don't know any better. I'm going to go like my favorite part of that rule, and Josh Whitman has a big part of it existing, is the idea that somebody who could maybe pay a player to throw a game can't just drive to Indiana and place the bet there. Like, I get the aspect of it too, where it's like, well, there's already so much pressure on these kids and I don't want them getting yelled at by somebody because they lost a bet. But how is that any different than them getting yelled at by somebody just because they missed a shot and they wanted them to win the damn game? Like, there's no difference. So I feel like it's one of those kind of, it's an optics thing, I think, more than it actually has any sort of real impact. And I think it's dumb. And I think the state's kind of damaging itself because the thing that is like when it comes to like the casual gambler, they want to bet on the teams that they like. And if you don't allow them to bet on the schools, like whether it's Illinois, Northwestern, or any other college in this state, you're just denying yourself income.
Yeah, so they saved us a decent amount of money. But do you think, I think they are changing the law. Are you going to partake at all?
No, you have to do it in person.
Oh,
like you can't, okay. You can't, like, I can't just be like, all right, let me open my phone here and take Illinois minus seven. I have to drive to a casino, which, no thanks. Like, there's not really one within 5 minutes of the house. So I'm not going to drive an hour to go place a bet on the Illini and then drive home.
I guess some of us have fingers crossed for when they add that component to Wrigley Field. Like, that'll be the only accessible one inside the city. But that's
then you got to be at Wrigley Field. So,
greatest ballpark in the country. Yeah.
Freaking, you know, a little theme park there. Oh, we're hanging out on Gallagher Way, drinking way too sugary margaritas. I might have gotten trashed once on margaritas hanging out at Gallagher Way.
Sounds like a pleasant evening. Yeah.
It was candy.
All right, and then our last question is just based off of today's news. So Rilla, Aston Villa, your other favorite soccer team, you have Illini basketball and Aston Villa is your two favorites, but they recently hired Steve Gerrard as their manager. The Bears hired Matt Eberflus as their head coach. Neither organization has won anything meaningful since the 80s. Who are you betting on to do it first?
Aston Villa, without a doubt. Well, define something meaningful.
A Super Bowl, or let's go with any of the cups that are not.
So like an FA Cup.
Or what if you make the Champions League?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Aston Villa. Because Aston Villa have very rich owners who are actually determined to win, instead of the Bears, who have very rich owners who are just happy to be very rich owners.
Justin Fields, though, can't get poached by another
Coutinho.
Love Justin Fields. That's the thing too, like the Matt Eberflus hire, I'm like, yeah, I don't care who's his OC gonna be, because that's really all that matters to me in this one. It's like, I just need to know what you're gonna do with Fields. I will say the one reason I'm somewhat optimistic about at least the Ryan Poles hire is that he comes from Kansas City. He's been there for 13 years. He worked under three different general managers. All three of them promoted him. But more than anything is that he was in Kansas City for Alex Smith and had a front row seat to watching an organization build a team around its quarterback, and then drafting another quarterback who is very different from Alex Smith as far as like an arm talent profile and a skill profile, and then completely had a front row seat to see them build a team around his strength. So at least I know the Bears now have a general manager who has seen somebody build a team around a good quarterback. Whether he's going to be able to do it himself remains to be seen.
All right. Well, we appreciate you coming on today. We have range on our podcast. We can talk about all four major sports in Chicago, except the Blackhawks, but there's our Blackhawks mention. We can talk about all the Power Five teams in Illinois as well. So we appreciate you coming.
Can you name five Blackhawks right now?
Alex DeBrincat.
Kane Taze.
Who's their goalie?
Oh, Andrew Fleury. He's still on the team.
Yes.
Exactly. That, I think my point's been made. We were probably all huge Blackhawk fans about 5 years ago, and right now
something about there. Yeah. One of our friends who's a big Blackhawks fan is going to listen to this and just be like, oh, you guys, I knew you were a bandwagon from the beginning. But appreciate you coming on today, Tom. Hopefully we get some positive Illinois results coming up, and the next year of the Brett Bielema era is at least another building block as a basis for the future. But
thanks, champs.
In DeVito we trust. All right. Mm-hmm. ILL
Forza DeVito. Thank you for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Tom.
Yes.